Well, no, I've never burned one out yet. Well, I'll have to go without it because we're. Well, we are at the last of the talks on the 12 labors and have one more Heracles talk. And we have the last four labors to cover. And so we begin with the ninth labor, which is the labor of Hippolyte's girdle. Supposedly, some people think that it was Aries, the Greek name for Mars, not the same as the sign of the zodiac, and the Naiad Harmonia, or Aries and Aphrodite, or someone else united, and from that union came the Amazons. There were two distinct different tribes of Amazons. The other had a different origin and actually lived in Libya. Heracles had a run-in with them also, but the Amazons lived in Phrygia first on the river Amazon, and they lived in the glens on a place called Acmonia. And the Amazon, there was a river there beside the Amazon River called the Tanais, because of a, it was named after Tanais, who committed suicide because he had a incestuous relationship with his mother, Lysippe. But the Amazons, for the most part, lived on the river Thermodon and in the Amazon Mountains. And they had three basic tribes. They have a long, long history. And they were very definitely feminists. That is, they believed that women were superior to men, that the men did all of the household work, and the women were the warriors, and they did the governing. And to make sure that this was the case, they broke the legs of all boys when they were infants so that they would be unfit for war. One of the Amazon sets, I believe those that began in Libya and were later on the island of Lesbos, were homosexual, except for procreation. From the river Thermodon, through various wars, they expanded their kingdom so that it ran all the way into Asia Minor. And they became quite a power. They went as far as Syria. And so they went from the river Tanais to Syria. In the spoils that they won in their wars, they raised great cities and great temples. And the temples were always dedicated to Ares, the warrior god, and to Artemis, the goddess of virgins and the protectress of virgin women. In fact, the later site of Ephesus is on one of the early sites of a temple to Artemis. You're familiar with the Temple of Diana at Ephesus, probably one of the most architecturally beautiful buildings the world has ever known. It was actually classified as one of the seven wonders of the world. It was so supremely beautiful. And it was so famous as a temple site that great and wealthy people took pilgrimages there on their chariots, and they went there so often that through the stone up going up the side of the mountain, they actually had ruts in the stone from chariot wheels driving up there. So it was quite a famous place. They had a lot of festivals dedicated to Artemis, in which they did shield dances and round dances, and they beat their quivers on the ground in unison while other Amazons played pipes. their vast kingdom eventually shrank, and they reconsolidated in the area of Thermodon, where they had three major cities, and these three major cities were ruled by three different queens. They were Antiope, Melanippe, and Hippolyte. And the quest was to get the girdle of Ares from Hippolyte. The Heracles did not take this labor alone. In fact, he took a number of other heroes with them. He took Telamon and Pelias, who were two cohorts in heroism, and he took Iolaus and he took Theseus along with him. And they sailed, and they had quite a few skirmishes along the way. I'm cutting these very short, or we'll never get the four labors in tonight. And eventually, their ship, they anchor at the mouth of Thermodon, and when they do that, Hippolyte, whose city is closest, comes to visit. And she sees the handsome and very muscular visage and body of Heracles, and she falls in love with him. At least since this is a Heracles version, that's the way it goes. And she offers him the girdle outright. But Hera says, this can't be this easy. So she disguises herself as one of the Amazons, and she stirs up all kinds of trouble and gets all of the Amazon women furious that their queen is being taken advantage of. And they come with brazen bows and their moon-shaped shields, and they mount a charge on the ship. What happens is, at this time, Heracles is romancing Hippolyte, and he suspects there's treachery of some kind or another, and he kills Hippolyte outright and takes the girdle from her and takes her axe and weapons, and in a very fierce battle, routs all of the rest of the Amazons and their armies. That's one version of the story. There are several versions of it. We can see right away, when the whole story is rested in the personage of Artemis, and that the whole story is about chastity and celibacy and virginity, and it is all about maintaining that without going overboard. That is, without going overboard into sexual perversion. There are lots of difficulties along this line, and very often the people who get themselves in the most evolutionary trouble are people who are aspirants to the mysteries, who would themselves be initiates, and they want to get there too soon, and they force something. Very often when they force something, they become black magicians. Or in aspiring to be celibate before they are ready, that is, before they're filled with the philosophy and filled with love, very often they start tuning into the inner worlds and they misunderstand universal love with universal affection, and already trying to attune themselves to the inner body, they go overboard and become homosexual. More homosexuals come from people who are philosophically aspiring than from people who are what you would say rude and rugged and such like that. So that's what the whole thing is about. It is the whole idea of developing the inner opposite. And when developing the inner opposite, we do it not by developing the chemical and life ethers, which would put us, you know, there, well, I don't want to get too carried away on details here, But if you develop the lower ethers and you treat the etheric vehicle as though its primary function were sustenance of material form and vitality, you have a perverted notion about the function of what the etheric body is. Whereas if you treat it as a vehicle of perception and a vehicle of projecting love and higher qualities into this world, or taking experience from this world and using it to serve the gods, then it is less dangerous because it becomes less like a physical vehicle and it becomes much more of a spiritual vehicle, and it indeed becomes the soul body. And not only do we build the etheric body by doing good deeds and by perceptive work and by creatively thinking about the world and by remembering things as soul material into the spiritual worlds, but we have to actually transfer